Hello, darlings, and welcome to One Inch Par Scary Podcast. This is Kirsty Sayer. It is May 10th, 2022. I hope you're doing well. It's been a little bit of a while. This has been a crazy couple of weeks for our family, crazy few weeks, and I think that's not unusual for this time of year. I always refer to this time of year as, chaotic. It is. It's a time just filled with lots of transitions. There are inevitably massive changes happening in different people's families just because it's a season of wrapping up academic years. And, because I have five kids, it's inevitable that somebody is wrapping up something significant around this time of year. And this year has not been any different. In addition to that, we know, and I think I've mentioned in recent podcast episodes, that May, April, actually all the way back to March, April, May, are very difficult, chaotic months for people who deal with mental health stuff. They're considered quite dangerous months. I think there's no sort of surprise as to why May has been designated as Mental Health Awareness Month, because there's definitely a spike in mental health crisis and suicide excuse me, this time of year. So if you are feeling chaotic, untethered, really struggling with depression or anxiety, or just that sort of like free-floating sense of unease, you're certainly not alone. I talk about this time of year every single year because it is hard for me, and every single time I think I've leveled up in terms of my triggers not taking me down anymore. I will be blessed with a new and fresh scenario in my life to deal with that's happening in present time, that will make me either activated just in a whole different way or just really tired and more susceptible to the triggers that I have overcome in the past. So I'm laughing just because, we can look at it in a way that can, like, life ever give us a break? Or we can look at it with amusement and gratitude, as the universe sort of says to us, listen, like, you are leveling up. I see that you're stronger now, and I would like you to be able to prove to yourself just that. And you're ready for more challenges. And I think that that is a way more productive and hopeful way of looking at things. It has certainly helped me to accept the difficulty of this month for what it is. It's difficult month. It's neither bad nor good. It's just challenging, and it's certainly a time when I am very conscious of being alive. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Life is, as Glennon Doyle so beautifully put it many years ago, and I adopted that phrase with alacrity. Beautiful. It is both beautiful and brutal in equal parts, and sometimes the beauty is really shining through and at the forefront, and sometimes the brutality of it is really kind of leading the way. But it's, there are both sides of the coin, and if you're feeling the brutal part or the anxious part, remind yourself that it's a reminder that you're alive and that you're paying attention and that you're feeling things. And if you're not feeling anything because you're so depressed and you're sort of buried in a sense of numbness, then this episode today is really for you, because I have been thinking a lot about that. I always pay attention to patterns when I'm planning a podcast of what's feeling relevant, what's coming up in different ways for me, for people I know. What am I seeing out there? What am I reading? And those messages just keep coming up. And then I assume that that is the message that needs to be shared, because I do not believe that any experience that we have, we're having alone, is unrelatable to anybody else. None of us ever suffer anything completely alone. We might feel that way, but we are never struggling in as unique a way as we might imagine. And that is the blessing, I think, of social media, making us so aware of that fact. I used to really get pissed off about how I discovered that I had no new ideas, because I used to think of myself as like incredibly creative, and I still do. I think that I'm very imaginative and creative. And I used to take a lot of pleasure in figuring things out, or coming up with creative ideas or creative party plans or just cool like life hacks. And it was so fun for me. And I realize now that part of it was that it got me feeling special, and it got me feeling unique. And I then discovered Pinterest, and I saw that everything that I was coming up with had already been done and better. And I got so sad. I was like, what the hell? I'm not special? You know, and social media just, you know, alerted me to the fact that there were many very gifted writers and many funny moms. And I took a real knock in the whole ego department over that. Yeah, because you have to understand, like, people who may be listening who grew up with social media have never been like burdened with the notion that they're extremely unique in their talents. And so I have had a lot of having to accept that just because my talent isn't unique doesn't mean it's not special, doesn't mean it's not valuable, and that I can find my group of people to whom I need to speak to. Like, just because there are other people in the world who are also good at writing, or also like have the gift of the gab and can speak endlessly on pretty much anything, doesn't mean that then I'm not needed. Because just because you're good at something and somebody else is good at something doesn't mean that you will all reach the same people in the same way, and that your message will hit exactly the same way. And you know, I really had to deal with, I mean, I'm taking a bit of a detour now, but I think it's relevant. I really had to deal with a lot of jealousy and sort of like scarcity when I first started to understand that, like, oh crap, like, there can only be one. There can only be one of us out there making funny material on what it is to parent a bunch of little kids. And what the hell? I found her out there. I thought I was the only. And she's so much better than me. She's so much funnier. And then I just sat out. I just sort of like counted myself entirely out. And what a shame that is, you know, because yeah, there's plenty of us, and we can support each other, and we're all telling our stories in slightly different ways. And there is room for plenty of laughter and plenty of stories, and there's room for all kinds of people to be sharing their experiences. And I have benefited from a huge range of women and men telling their stories in different ways, and I appreciate them all and laugh and cry over just the different ways in which they tell them. Anyway, you get the gist. But I, in the same way, have been very, very heartened and blessed and comforted to discover that my trials and my struggles were not unique to me. And the fact that I was dealing with them in ways that seemed society never understood was also not unique to me. And it started to give me a lot more permission to take care of myself and to take the time that I needed to take to heal and to accept that that was normal and that that was good and that that was productive in its own way, because society sort of had fed me one way of being, and that was okay, which meant that you're highly productive in a way that society values and capitalism really can milk. And through my healing process and also being supported by the tales of others and you know, many mental health professionals, including the one that I had working with me, you know, face to face, I was also backed up with by lots and lots of data from lots and lots of other people who were dealing with complex PTSD and were assuring me that it was okay to rest and heal and to define my success in ways that society and especially capitalism did not reward. And that was just fine. And that has actually, you know, really saved me in many ways. And so I'm here to tell you that the last couple of weeks I found myself just feeling incredibly blocked and energetically just heavy and low and in that state of what I've now can recognize as the freeze trauma response. And, you know, May serves up a lot of the fight and flight as well, because there's just a lot of anxiety and there's a lot of transitioning, which really activates those of us who have had abandonment in our childhood of any kind, which means, you know, emotional, physical abandonment, where we just didn't have our needs cared for or we didn't feel seen or safe. Maybe more actively, we were betrayed or, you know, we were not protected. So watching children of the same age or similar ages to what I was when I did sort of experience a major setback in terms of massive amounts of abandonment on every level, watching my own children at that age go through the same kind of transitions that I was going through when all that went down subconsciously activates a lot. So I'm dealing with that, like my sort of inner child and my past self is being activated without me being conscious of it. And at the same time, my mother is grieving that there are transitions in a period that I felt very valuable, that I felt very fulfilled, and that I was safe in and felt rewarding, and is also grieving just the very obvious fact that my children are not going to be in my home as much anymore. They don't need me in the same way anymore. Plus, the complexities of recognizing that this is awesome and feeling so incredibly proud of them and feeling celebratory and just wanting to revel in that and being ready for them to, you know, spread their wings and fly the nest, because this is exactly what my job was all this time, is preparing them to do that and getting them ready and allowing myself the space, or wanting to allow myself the space of being like, damn, girl, you did it. You actually had a major part to play in them being ready to leave you and have their own fulfilling lives. Good on you. And the thing is that society wants us to just focus on that. It wants us to be just damn happy and throw parties and be so freaking proud and happy. And it doesn't give us a lot of space to talk about or to process the sadness of chapters coming to an end, the loss, the grief of our children moving out, and how much we will just miss them, miss their presence, miss their just their company. Because a lot of us, you know, find our kids extremely fun and engaging and good friends, and I certainly do. I enjoy their company wholeheartedly. They're like my favorite people. And so, like, I'm losing my favorite people as well as my role in their lives. I'm transitioning beyond that. And the complex part is also coping with those triggers because I identify with them. I identify with those kids at this age, and it's awakening a part of myself that's going, oh, wait, so now that I'm leaving home, that's it then. I will be abandoned, which I was at their age. I was fully abandoned, not just in what do you call it? Like a practical way, like that I was just kind of dumped on the other side of the world and forgotten about and had to make my own way in the world. But also, and I'm not as bitter as I sound. I'm just figuring this out while I speak. But also in a way that I started to really come to grips with what had been done to me and want to acknowledge that and explore that with people so that I could start to heal, and being shut down and gaslit and told that it was either my fault, alternatively, it just didn't happen, by the people that should have helped me, and sort of guilted and burdened by that those ideas, like the whole family is going to fall apart if you speak of this, never speak of this. And any pain that is caused will be directly because you did. So, that's a lot to navigate when you're very young and you haven't had a safe background. So there's, those three different parts. The part that's a brave, evolved, and happy mom, seeing that she did her job right and sending kids out there. Then there's the part that's grieving and sad that her job now has changed, her job description has changed, and she's losing something that she feels like she was good at and that fulfilled her. And she's also losing those wonderful favorite people. And then, of course, the child. And I think that this is so, so not unique to me, which is why I'm talking about it in such great detail. Obviously, I've been so very blessed to have such a supportive, healing environment when I finally did get to be able to do that, a few years ago. But I recognize that not all of you have had that opportunity and that space and that grace in which to really kind of examine all these parts and to grieve all of these parts and heal from all of these parts and understand them. So that's why I'm breaking it all down for you. I do this quite often. I come back to it quite often because I never know who I'm going to kind of, grab in this net with each episode, or who might know somebody who could hear it. And so that's why I'm giving this to you. But that all said, for me, with all this going on, and then lots of other new stuff that would be very emotionally, mentally, and just physically taxing has been happening at the same time, separate to motherhood. But of course, everything is intertwined. Everything I do impacts my kids. I do still have one who will be living at home. I have a couple who live in this town. We've been looking at options which required a complete life change, a complete, massive move and everything this month, and that's still definitely in flux. I have ongoing health issues which crop up, at the most inconvenient of times, but probably are connected to, me being more tired and me neglecting the things that I need to do to stay healthy. So everything's felt heavy and tiring. And then you start to tell yourself stories, right? When you're tired and you're unmotivated, you have the option of telling yourself a couple of different stories. The story that we tend to default to is that you're lazy or less than other people who are doing more. You are stuck. And you don't know how to get unstuck, so then you feel unempowered, which is in and of itself, a very triggering emotion to feel unempowered in getting yourself out of what you perceive to be a stuck place is a sense of, powerlessness that might be very triggering to something that you've experienced when you truly were powerless as a child. and can feel dangerous. And then, of course, that just exacerbates a freeze response. I'm powerless to get out of this very uncomfortable place that I'm in. These stories obviously are very unhelpful. Telling yourself you're lazy is a unkind thing to say. Telling anybody that they're lazy is unkind, and I believe extremely inaccurate, right? Telling yourself that if you know you're not lazy but you can't get unstuck, that you or you don't feel well, that you're unlucky, that if only you had the same amount of energy levels, or that you had better health than the people that you see who are moving through their lives, and you perceive it with more vitality than you, more health than you, more motivation than you, just they're lucky and you're not lucky. These are all just unhelpful, very low energy stories to tell that just pile the dirt on top of this hole that you're sitting in. And I found myself in that pattern. And so, on the one hand, I'm highly activated and very anxious, but I'm also very, very exhausted. And it's all just a cycle. And something I've stumbled on over time that I was reminded of this week, when I feel this way, is to look at myself in the mirror as I'm getting ready for bed, brushing my teeth, washing my face, noting how tired I feel and look, and just acknowledging it, and say to myself, "Kirsty, you're very tired, you poor thing." And putting no value on why you're tired, you just are. It doesn't matter why you're tired. It doesn't matter if you shouldn't be tired, or somebody else would be less tired under the same circumstances. Just not letting that enter into the equation whatsoever. Just wow. I look at you and I see you, and I humanely make the observation that you are so tired. And you know what fixes tiredness? Rest. You deserve to rest. I see you're tired and you deserve to rest. And the fact that maybe it appears that you've been resting, doing nothing but resting for the last 2 days or 2 months or 2 years, means nothing. I see you today and you look tired, and that means rest is required. You should rest. And in fact, that's what you're going to do. Tomorrow, you're going to rest. And I have then decided, when I look at my tired face and I rinse it off and put my toothbrush back on the shelf, tomorrow is a day of rest. And I assign it as such. I will rest tomorrow. I will do nothing beyond that which I absolutely have to do. There are certain things that I will have to do, but as soon as I'm done with them, I will rest. I will make as much space in my day just to rest. I will let every single thing that can possibly be let go, go. And that might mean that life is inconvenient for others, or that my house is gross, or that people judge me, and that's a shame. That's their business. But I am going to rest. I will make very, very intentional commitments to myself to rest, including you're going to stay in your pajamas tomorrow. I will put the remote on my side of the bed to remind me when I wake up. You can stay in bed and watch TV if you like, if that's restful to you. I will, if at all possible, turn off my alarm. I will cancel any plans. I will tell myself, no, you're not going to do that. You're not going to go to the gym. You're not going to do any of those things. You have to rest tomorrow. It's a rest day, and schedule it as such. And everybody listening may have a different response to this. You might go, wow, must be nice. And that will be a resentful response on your part, which is rooted in envy and anger that you don't get to do the same thing. And I'm sorry if that feels that way for you. I really, really am, because you, probably might be able to rest more than you think you can. You may not feel as empowered as I do to rest, but I do feel empowered, and I'm also a very aware of the sacrifices that come from that empowerment, and that you give up other things when you choose to rest. And maybe you just don't feel like you are empowered to give up those things, and that's okay. Like, forgive yourself for that. That's cool. Others of you might go, wow, I've never thought of it this way. I could actually rest. Like, I just needed somebody to tell me it was okay and that it was a good idea. And then I say, yeah, like, it absolutely is a good idea, and I'm going to tell you why in a moment. So, I'll wake up the next day fully intending to rest. And weirdly enough, when I wake up fully intending to rest, there's a sense of lightness. You know, not so much that I'll just bound out of bed and go, ha, psych, I'm running a marathon today instead. No, but I will feel a slight sense, a slight lightening in my load. And maybe I will rest for an extra hour, but then I'll feel like, you know what, like you could actually get out of bed and go and make some coffee. Like that sounds nice. And when I do that, I'll be like, you know, like I kind of just feel like doing these dishes. It just feels like something I can take on today, and it feels like it would be rewarding. I'm going to experiment with how that feels, and if halfway through it doesn't feel good and I just get that incredible tiredness again, I'm just going to stop it and go back to bed. I'm fully committed to that. And before I know, half the day is done, and maybe I'm still in my pajamas, but maybe I'm not. Maybe I've got dressed and gone for a walk, gone for a run. I feel a lot better. I feel lighter. And at the end of the day, I've discovered that I've taken on a bunch of projects that I didn't feel empowered or able to do before because they looked like fun and they looked like something that I could do. And they looked like something that would make me feel better and more energized that day. And I'd taken away any obligation to do it. I just thought I might. And at the end of the day, I've hacked my brain. It turns out I was tired because I kept telling myself I had to do shit, and it seemed very overwhelming, and I was exhausted. I was exhausted by the obligation of every single thing I had to do that day because it was too much. And when I told myself that I had to do nothing, I was suddenly empowered to do something, and that something led to something more, and it felt good. And that feeling good led to something yet more, and I've had a more productive day in weeks than I have in weeks or even months. And I feel good and I don't feel tired. And then maybe the tiredness creeps in again because tomorrow I'm like, well, see, you've shown yourself that night, I say, you've shown yourself you can do all these things and tomorrow you must do them all again and then some. And I unravel all of that and the burden feels heavy. And if I am wise, I tell myself, nope, you don't have to do a single thing tomorrow. You're still tired. You didn't really rest that much today. You can just rest tomorrow. There's nothing you need to do tomorrow. If you feel too tired to do it, just don't do it. And obviously, yes, there are days when I actually just have to freaking power through no matter how tired I am. There's been more days in my life than that, like that, than not. And I have successfully powered through and I get a sense of satisfaction from those days too. But those days are few and far between in reality. You don't have to do everything you think you have to do on every day. Most days you don't. There are some special days. There are some special days that are just about somebody else. And if you do not power through, they will not remember that day fondly or you fondly. And that's kind of the burden of being a mom. And there are just some days that I've put my head down and powered through. Just out of love and commitment, and I'm 100% cognizant that those days exist, and we just have to kind of like rise to those days. But there are more days than not where you can let stuff go and should let stuff go and just give your permission to let it go. And then suddenly you might find that the weight of obligation and judgment that you have been putting on yourself as you sat there in freeze mode, telling yourself that you should be doing other things, exhausting yourself even more, has been lifted and you have a bunch of energy freed up to do more. So, I want to talk about a couple of ways in which Nikia Homer, who I love, she has a book that is called I Hope This Helps. And she talks about healing. And I just happened to, when I had already decided to talk to you about just this topic, right before I picked this book up with my microphone, in fact, and opened it to this page. And this is why I follow signs and I follow patterns. It says, "You are not lazy, unmotivated, or stuck. After years of living your life in survival mode, you are exhausted. There's a difference." And I literally told somebody this a few days ago. I'd said, I don't believe, and I never have believed in using the word lazy. There are not lazy people. There are unmotivated and tired and exhausted people, or people who are being asked to do things beyond their capacity. But lazy people do not exist, because people are wired for action and creativity. We like it. We feel good. It's rewarding for us. Nobody is lazy. They're just people who are tired or being asked for things that are beyond or their capacity or outside of their interest. Okay. And she asked these things. I'm going to read it to you because it's just so good. It's on page 64 of her book. "Have you ever been there, still tired after waking up? On autopilot during the day, tuning in and out of conversations, feeling away but don't know why? I can recall being there at least twice." Here, Kirsty is raising her hand, saying, like, thousands of times. "The weight of my life and the lives of the people I love the most became too much for me, and I found myself physically, emotionally, and spiritually exhausted. I didn't know if it was emotional exhaustion at first. I thought I was lacking motivation. I thought I had lost my way. I thought I was being weak." How many of us tell those stories to ourselves? You're so weak. "And trying to explain this to other people is even more exhausting." Kirsty's saying here, yes, it is. When they look at you with that blank, kind of squinty eye, like, just do it then. Ah, that's tiring stuff. All right, back to Nakia. "We are not meant to survive our way through our entire lives. It's unfair to our souls. And when the weight of surviving becomes too much, it is okay to stop, to rest, to disconnect, to retreat, and to heal." And then she offers ways to heal emotional exhaustion. So if just taking the day off, like I just suggested, to rest is not for you, then this is what she says. "Set aside at least one night for a full 9 hours of sleep." For me, that entails medication. I don't just sleep. Very rarely do I just sleep the sleep of the heavily exhausted. I need some assistance, and that's okay. That was me, by the way, on the medication front. Then she says, "Create a restorative morning routine that includes prayer, meditation, and a positive reading or media, podcasts, videos. When I'm feeling really tired and I just need good sort of like energizing input, I definitely stay off social media at first. I also stay off the news. I always stay off the news if I can help it. And I just queue up a bunch of tried and true meditations or podcasts or just very short YouTube videos that are uplifting and reassuring. Start with 7 days of consistent journaling, extending this writing practice 7 days at a time. And tell your story to a safe ear. Find someone, a therapist, a religious leader, a best friend that you can release your story to. Someone who will hear you, see you, and feel you without judgment." That is a good one and a big one, and that's a major ask. You know, a lot of us are like struggling to find that safe person or have committed to getting help, but you know, our medical sort of system is not conducive to getting us that help in a timely way. I see you. I recognize how exhausting that in and of itself is, and you know, sometimes that just seems like too much of a burden. I completely hear you on that. So if that's a task that seems too tiring, then put it aside for a while or delegate it to somebody else and start with the other things. My advice is always just, you know, when you go to bed, tell yourself tomorrow is a day of rest and anything that you do not have to do can be put aside. That means everything you think you should do. There are a couple of things like that are non-negotiables. For me, you know, obviously, I've got to get my kid to school. I've got to pick her up. I've got to be present for her needs. That does not mean that I have to engage in really exhausting things. I do not need to host a play date. I can tell her this is not the day. I do not need to watch like several episodes of a show that I find hyper stimulating and exhausting. I can just sort of tell her that I'm having a restful day and that I'm tired and, you know, check in with her and we can cuddle and discuss things that are on her mind, but, you know, it doesn't have to be a high energy engagement day. When you have littler kids, you know, those are the days that you can let the TV babysit more. You can throw goldfish at kids from the couch. You don't have to take kids to the park and the library. You know, you can skip story time. There are ways in which people who are working parents can take time off. You can ask your kids or ask their friends, parents to give them rides to soccer practice. I have been very lucky to be able to have friends who would step in when they could tell that I was at that point of emotional exhaustion. And it does take some humbling. It was hard for me to do, but it's basically kept me alive over the years. You don't have to go to every game. You can skip some of them. People will survive you not watching a game. You can order pizza, even if it's the cheap Little Caesars pot, Little Caesars type. We call it Little Caesars. You can serve breakfast for dinner. You can let the dishes lie. You can use paper plates. You can let kids wear dirty socks. There's a great many things that you can do that will mean nothing in the long run. Absolutely nothing. But you resting and taking care of yourself always, always is a massively good investment. I am not a working parent, and I fully accept that this means that there's a lot of things that I cannot speak on. But I do think that corporate America will bleed you dry. It will take from you whatever you offer up and then some. And putting boundaries, firm boundaries into place regarding that is so necessary just for your survival. Take your free days, take your paid time off, take your sick days, take anything that you can. Do not let your job ask you to do more than your job for an extended periods of time. You know, don't let people take advantage of you to the point that your health suffers because you are replaceable to any corporation or organization, but you're not replaceable to your family. And you only have one wild and precious life. So if there are ways in which you are telling yourself that you're irreplaceable at work, the very difficult truth is that you're not. So don't sell your life for, you know, that affirmation that you're super important and that they need you and that nobody else can do what you do, because they will, in a trice, if you were to keel over dead, find somebody who will do something akin to what you do. But people in your family will never find that, and you will also never have this life back. So rest is a really worthy investment. Truly it is. And I understand that we all need to make money to make ends meet, and that there are certain obligations and commitments and things that we cannot get out of, and it's also all very, very difficult and not ideal. But always approach your work-life balance with that in mind, that you're infinitely replaceable at work, no matter how specialized you think you are, how good at your job you are replaceable. Sad but true, and always good to understand sooner rather than later. So yeah, I will leave you with that. May is a month. Man, it's a month. Be as gentle on yourself as you possibly can. This energy is exhausting. It can be a joyful, it can be heavy, it can be scary, it can be anxiety promoting, it can be depressing, but it's very present. May is a time of massive transitions, and be conscious of that. Transition is tiring. Think of how much little babies need to sleep as they transition from infants into little walking, talking people. It's exhausting. Take the time to rest. You are worthy of it. You are so, so, so very loved and so very precious and so very irreplaceable to the people that actually matter. And this is your life. So you get to call the shots. Much love. I will talk to you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.